Today's podcast of The Takeaway is made possible by Liberty Mutual's Responsibility Project, encouraging discussion about what it means to do the right thing. ResponsibilityProject.com.
Michelle Obama wants us all to lose weight, and she needs your help.
This is going to require an effort on everyone's part.
So come on, everyone, chip in with your ideas on how to reduce the size of America.
My advice, eat real food.
Small meals throughout the day that'll get your metabolism moving and help you burn fat.
I became a vegetarian about 5 years ago, and I've lost over 30 pounds. And we gotta
How much weight do we have to lose? Well, there are about 308 million people in the United States, and we've gained about 24 pounds each. So that's more than 7 billion pounds. Get on the treadmill. It's The Takeaway.
All across America, this is The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee. From Public Radio International and WNYC.
Good morning. This is The Takeaway. The right takeaway from this story about obesity is that...
pretty demoralizing.
Well, if we lose 7 billion pounds, that means we gain a couple feet of coastline on both ends of the...
I'm just going to change the subject here. Let's look at the top stories we're following. A second major snowstorm in less than a week is blanketing the Northeast. Baltimore, D.C., Philadelphia, New York City all expected to get as much as a foot of snow, making for a tough commute to work, even a tougher day to fly. And the snow has grounded hundreds of flights from New Jersey to Washington. In New York City, the public schools are closed, for the third time, only the third time in the past 6 years.
The bad news continues to snowball for Toyota. The company's now recalling more than 7,000 Camrys for brake problems, and the government safety officials say they're looking into a number of complaints with the steering on Toyota Corollas. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood tells NBC News,
"We are going to hold Toyota's feet to the fire when it comes to these recalls. We are looking into all aspects of complaints that have come to our department."
The problems aren't just limited to Toyota. Honda has added another 400,000 cars in the U.S. to its recall for faulty airbags. Japan's number two automaker has been recalling cars since 2008. Today's latest expansion includes certain Honda Accords, Civics, and Acuras.
A grim story out of Haiti. The government has raised the death toll for last month's earthquake to 230,000, making the disaster, at least in numbers, as deadly as the 2004 Asian tsunami.
And thousands of troops are on the move in Afghanistan. With the Afghans in the lead, soldiers from NATO are pouring into Helmand province. They're poised to launch a major offensive to drive the Taliban from Marja. Far from a surprise attack, this operation has been publicized well in advance. Joining us now is retired Colonel Sam Gardner. He taught military strategy at the National War College and the Naval War College. Colonel Gardner, good morning.
Good morning.
What do you think about this strategy of publicizing this offensive in advance in order to give insurgents a chance to flee?
Well, this is not the invasion of Normandy. This is an operation that reflects the complexities of Afghanistan. Part of the reason for the notification is so that President Karzai can back out of the operation. Part of the reason for the notification is to give mid-level Taliban a chance to turn sides. Another reason is that the United States would like the civilians to stay in place, and the Afghans want the civilians to leave. Complexity of the Afghan problem.
That's retired Colonel Sam Gardner. We're going to be talking more about that problem in just a moment.
President Obama reacted yesterday, talking tough about Iran's nuclear program.
We're going to be working on over the next several weeks is developing a significant regime of sanctions that will indicate to them how isolated they are from the international community as a whole.
Iran yesterday said it would begin enriching uranium to 20%, well short of weapons grade, but significantly more.
Looking at the markets, futures are up. The Dow will start at 10,058. The S&P opens at 1,070 and the NASDAQ at 2,150. So Valentine's Day is coming up. So how do you make a meal for your sweetheart that'll knock them off their feet? We're going to talk about that later this hour.
A lot of people will be doing that. It's a snow day for a lot of Americans. What are your memories of snow days? 8778-MY-TAKE or mytake at thetakeaway.org.
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
As we speak, thousands of U.S., British, and Afghan soldiers are poised to push into a Taliban stronghold in the area of Marja in Afghanistan's southern Helmand province. The town is one of the last strongholds of the Taliban in this mountainous area, and it's the center of the opium trade for insurgents as well. Traditionally, strategists like to use the element of surprise, but this operation has been widely publicized for at least a week or two in advance. Here's U.S. and NATO Commander Stanley McChrystal speaking a couple days ago.
We're trying to make this not a military operation only, but a civilian and military operation, because really the thing that's changing is going to be the level of security in the area, but the governance.
Let's go now to Captain Abraham Sipe. Captain Sipe is a public affairs officer at Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan, and the Marines at Camp Leatherneck will form the main column of this assault. Good morning, Captain.
Hey, good morning. How are you today?
Can you respond to this description by General Stanley McChrystal that this is going to be not just a military offensive, but a civilian offensive as well, cooperation with the civilian side? How is the civilian government of Afghanistan coordinating?
It absolutely is going to be both a military and civilian effort. The military portion, the clear portion of the operation is just one small part of an overall strategy to bring Marja back into the fold and return the legitimate government of Afghanistan to a government presence to the city of Marja.
Can you explain the strategy of warning people in advance that this offensive is coming? Is that expected to make the Taliban flee, or is it just the residents that are fleeing the area?
We don't necessarily have a big problem with the enemy fleeing Marja. If the enemy flees Marja, then it'll make it a lot more conducive to us returning and providing those services and returning security and stability to the city. And the numbers of families leaving Marja right now, our estimates are a lot less than what has been reported in the press. But we hope that as soon as possible we can make Marja a place where the citizens feel very safe and secure once we can get the legitimate Afghan national security forces and government returning to the city.
But Captain Sipe, when you warn the enemy in advance, aren't you taking the risk that they're going to dig in their heels, that they're going to hide in various places around the city, that they're going to have time to plant IEDs and other booby traps around the area?
Well, I'll tell you, I've been here for 9 months with Task Force Leatherneck, and Marja has been there the entire time. So it's not, they have been dug in Marja for quite some time. I'm not sure that we think that the added risk that we might be taking by giving a warning is actually going to be outweighed by the benefits of letting the people know that, hey, this is what we're about to do, and we're doing it for the long-term safety and security of your homes and your livelihoods.
We're also told that ISAF is aiming to get a 1-to-1 ratio with one Afghan for every NATO soldier, but number one, can you achieve that? And number two, are these forces, many of them are Pashto recruits that you guys have specifically targeted, are they well-trained? Are they well-equipped?
I'm not going to discuss specific numbers right now, but I can say that we've done one major operation when we started this deployment. It was called Operation Kanjar in July. And in July, we had about 4,000 ISAF service members partnered with about 650 Afghan National Security Forces. And that's about a 7 or 8 to 1 ratio. I can tell you that the ratios of ISAF to Afghan National Security Forces for this operation are going to be very closer to a 1-to-1 ratio. I don't think that we can say it's a 1-to-1 ratio at this time, and I'm not going to discuss specific numbers, but it will be a large Afghan National Security Force presence during the operation and also after the operation to come in and restore order into the city.
Captain Abraham Sipe is a public affairs officer at Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. Let's return now to a military analyst, retired Colonel Sam Gardner. Colonel, I wanted to get your thoughts about this planned offensive in Marja. Do you think this strategy of moving into the Helmand province is a good one?
Well, it's uncontrolled territory. It's not governed by the Afghan government. If the United States' ultimate objective of turning over control to the Afghans is going to be achieved, we got to do it. It's also, as you actually mentioned earlier, a center of opium production. That's a big problem. Although it may not be the primary source of income now for the Taliban, it is a major source of income. So the strategic objectives demand that that something be done about it.
Well, could we get into the situation where we're playing whack-a-mole, where we move them out of Marja, they're just going to move their forces to another area and dig in somewhere else?
Oh, certainly. And in fact, that's the danger of the advance notification. However, reports coming from civilians who are fleeing there suggest that that's not happening. The civilians that are coming out are saying that the Taliban are digging in for a big fight. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. Some of the civilians that come out could in fact be Taliban, but it looks like it's going to be a big fight.
Well, we're getting reports that there's somewhere between 400 and 1,000 Taliban in Marja. If they're digging in, doesn't the Taliban really have everything to gain here, even if they lose soldiers, in terms of being treated like a real, respectable, credible insurgent force? Isn't that, in terms of PR, a good thing for them?
Well, the real critical thing is how the Afghans react. This is as much a test of the Afghan police and military as it is a test for, the General McChrystal's strategy. How they perform is what we need to watch very carefully.
Retired Colonel Sam Gardner, he taught military strategy at the National War College and at the Naval War College. We were also joined from Afghanistan by Captain Abraham Saip. He's the Deputy Public Affairs Officer for Camp Leatherneck in Afghanistan. Thanks to both of you.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Hey, you want that to go?
Our news takeouts this morning come from Washington, come from international business, and we explore a truism. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but people love to talk about weight loss. You know, go figure.
They do.
Later on, you'll hear some of your remarks. But first, we go to Capitol Hill. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent. The reporters were surprised yesterday when Barack Obama stepped to the podium and delivered an impromptu and surprise news conference.
This gives an opportunity not just for Democrats to say, here's what we think we should do, but it also gives Republicans a showcase before the entire country to say, here's our plan, here's why we think this will work. And you know, one of the things that John Boehner and Mitch McConnell both said is they didn't think that the status quo was acceptable. And that's right there promising.
So Todd Zwillick, Barack Obama talking about how chummy he is all of a sudden with John Boehner and Mitch McConnell, the key Republicans who are fighting him on health care reform. Is this right plan to bring everybody under a single tent with the cameras rolling going to work?
Well, we'll see. You know, there's a strong indication just overnight, John. There's a new Washington Post ABC poll out that probably sheds some light on why the president is doing this. You know, 57% of those polled said it was a good thing that Democrats lost their 60-vote filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. But an equal number said that the GOP isn't doing enough to find compromises with the president. So what this is turning into is a little bit of a game of chicken that the president sort of has control over. Hey, I'm going to reach out or appear to be reaching out. Republicans, your strategy of opposition, which has worked so well so far, this poll also showed that Republicans are gaining in the polls. This strategy that has worked so well so far, see if he can disarm them a little bit and force them into some cooperation. It's a bit of a game of chicken.
All right, well, we'll talk to you later this week to see if anyone blinks at all. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent.
Let's turn now to Louise Story, the Wall Street and Finance reporter for our partner, the New York Times. And Louise, we heard that China has added another title to its resume. They knocked Germany out of their long-held spot as the world's top exporter. What exactly does this mean? China ready to take over the world?
China is on the rise, Celeste. They had $1.2 trillion in exports in 2009, and Germany only had $1.1 trillion. If you remember back in 2003, Germany surpassed the U.S. in terms of exports. So now China's at the top. everyone's going to be watching for other milestones from China. It's on track now to replace Japan as the world's second largest economy soon, behind the U.S., and then the question will be, when does it replace the U.S. as the largest economy? That's, you know, a lot further off, and it's still a question.
Well, China, they did overtake Germany as the top exporter, but their trade fell last year.
Right, but Germany's exports fell a lot more. Germany exports a lot of its goods to the rest of Europe, and you know Europe is having a lot of problems over there, and they're not buying as much. And so Germany's fell almost 20%.
So this is a status symbol? Is this a symbolic title that they have, or does this mean something in terms of their future?
No, this is not symbolic. This is real money. This is business. The more that countries are exporting, the more money that they're bringing in for their own residents to educate them and to improve their standard of living. So this is a true change in the economy, and it means a lot for our global economy.
Okay, Louise Story is the finance reporter for our partner, The New York Times.
It'd be interesting to sort of compare the product mix from Germany versus China. You know, the BMWs from Germany, the machine sort of value-added products versus a lot of raw manufactured materials from China. It's an interesting
and
sort of
And we've had trouble
picture.
With a lot of the exports coming out of China as well,
well
in
there,
terms
there
of
is,
quality control. That's an issue.
And Germany's had some problems as well, but very interesting. Our last takeout is listeners crowing about weight loss. And I have to say, some of them made me a little bit nervous here. The First Lady announced that new initiative to combat childhood obesity yesterday, and we thought it's kind of hard for people to lose weight, okay? And we asked, let's get some tips from our listeners, the wisdom of our listeners. Sounds like there was a lot of success stories.
I lost about 30 pounds.
And I've just lost 61 pounds.
Lose 30 pounds in one summer.
I've dropped about 100 pounds, and my quality of life is just so much better.
You know, maybe we should start a cable show here. It's just a sample of stories you're telling us at 8778-MY-TAKE and posting to our site, thetakeaway.org.
There's a couple of different categories in terms of how people found weight loss success. There's exercising more.
This is Ann Arlen from New York City. My key is working out four times a week. If I do that, I can eat anything I want anytime. And I get stronger, and it's fun.
My name is Val. I'm from Rhode Island. I just recently lost about 100 pounds, and it's just all about moving. And I'm not eating any less. I'm eating more, but of the right food. Move more, and just keep eating all day.
Also on our weight loss plan from you, the issue of what it is you're putting in your mouth.
This is Allison from New Jersey. I lost weight by cutting out carbs. I don't eat desserts, and I don't drink soda, and I lost 15 pounds. People were wondering how I did it.
My name is Ty. I'm from Hanover, Massachusetts. I became a vegetarian about 5 years ago, and over the course of those 5 years, I've lost over 30 pounds and feel healthier and great.
That is great. All of you contacted us at 8778-MY-TAKE. I love this slogan, move more and just keep eating. But remember, it's the quantity of how much you eat that's important.
My name is Nate Cal. I'm calling from Edison, New Jersey, and the way I keep my weight down is I take tiny bites of my food and really savor it, and I eat slowly. And by the time I'm done eating, I'm only eating half my food, and everyone else is completely done.
This is Russell Oak from Miami. My advice is to actually eat more. What you need to do is just eat small portions throughout the day, particularly the most important, right away in the morning to get your metabolism going. And then instead of eating three large meals, instead just eat small meals throughout the day. That'll get your metabolism moving and help you burn fat.
And, of course, this is a global story.
My name's Joe Mark. I'm from Australia. I've moved from Australia 3 weeks ago, and I am amazed at the size of your portions in restaurants. It is, without any exaggeration, twice, sometimes three times the portion that we get served in restaurants in Australia. You could solve problems overnight if you halved portion sizes in this country.
I'll take that portion super small, okay? Here's some advice from the Aussies there. 8778-MY-TAKE, your weight loss tips. It never ceases to amaze me that people love to talk about this. My take at thetakeaway.org. My weight loss tips? I don't have any. Can't you tell?
You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Coming up, radio in Haiti, the medium that actually made the difference between life and death for so many. We're going to learn how in just a few moments. Right now, let's check in on top news stories at 30 minutes after the hour. U.S. and Afghan forces have moved to the edge of the city of Marja, a major supply and drug smuggling stronghold for the Taliban. part of an offensive NATO is beginning in Helmand province against the Taliban. The government in Haiti has raised the death toll for last month's earthquake to 230,000, making the disaster as deadly as the 2004 Asian tsunami. But there's still a serious situation with homeless people. Haitian Prime Minister Jean-Max Bellerive says the situation will continue to deteriorate.
We are still in a very difficult situation. 1 month after that, we still have 1 million of people on the streets. We still don't have a clear vision of a certain problem, clear how we are going to relocate all those people.
Meanwhile, the 10 American missionaries charged with kidnapping will be back in a Haitian courtroom later today. More on Haiti coming right up.
Blizzard warnings in effect throughout the Mid-Atlantic. Some who didn't get hit by a snowstorm over the weekend are going to get it today. Snow is falling right now from northern Virginia to Connecticut. New York City, which missed the last storm, has closed schools and canceled some flights at its airports. And at the White House last night...
Anybody here seen my old friend Martin?
President Obama welcomed an all-star lineup of musicians to celebrate Black History Month for a special airing on
PBS. Smokey Robinson. That's
that is Smokey
nice.
Robinson singing at Abraham Martin and John. Let's check on the markets. Asian and European markets are up. Futures are up as well. The Dow will start at 10,058. The S&P opens at 1,070 and the NASDAQ at 2,150. Those are some of the stories we're watching this morning.
You know, in times of crisis, it's radio that often becomes the real information lifeline. It used to be shortwave radios were the only information channels in far-flung parts of the world during times of disaster. These days, radio is joined by other forms of electronic communication, Twitter, Facebook. We saw all of them out in force in Haiti as people struggled after the worst earthquake there in 200 years. The death toll now estimated at 230,000, which is on par with the Asian tsunami of 2004, where radio played an important role back in 2004 in the tsunami as well. In Haiti, radio ran down the rumors. Radio told people where to get food and medical help and how to reconnect with loved ones. Radio was special during the earthquake, and radio also has a very special place in Haitian culture. It's back in force on the island. Emilio San Pedro is an editor for Connexion Haiti, a lifeline program created by our partner, the BBC, to help Haitians get all kinds of basic information that is still needed since the earthquake. Emilio, good morning.
Good morning.
Emilio is with us from Miami, where the Connexion Haiti is broadcast from. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And also, Michael Dibert joins us. He's a freelance journalist and author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle from Haiti. And you were part of our coverage in those very early days, Michael. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you very much.
Describe, Michael, first of all, your sense of the importance of radio in Haiti and the importance of radio information sources during this earthquake.
Well, I would say in Haiti, you know, where newspapers are kind of few and far between in the best of times, I mean, radio plays a particularly important role in terms of disseminating information. And certainly in the aftermath of this really devastating earthquake, some of the stations that were able to continue broadcasting really played a very important role in terms of telling people what was happening with their family members, in terms of telling people where food was distributed, where aid was being distributed, things like that, even though the radio stations in Haiti had also suffered quite badly.
And because so many of the stations were off the air, the BBC saw that there was a need, and here's a feel for Connexion Haiti.
Objectif nous simple, c'est bas information important pour millions haïtiens tremblement de terre là affecté. Information vitale.
Emilio San Pedro, that's a part of a air check from Connexion Haiti. Why did the BBC decide to do this? And you're broadcasting in Creole there. What's the mission of Connexion Haiti?
Well, the mission is very simple. It's to bring that basic information that you were talking about, because even though the earthquake may have happened nearly a month ago now, it's still very early days in the whole relief and recovery effort. So it's still about giving people in Haiti a place where they can talk about the earthquake, because after all, these are all people who survived what is arguably the worst natural disaster ever in the Western Hemisphere.
We were speaking with Emilio San Pedro, who's editor for Connexion Haiti, with our partner, the BBC, and Michael Dibert, who's a freelance journalist and author of of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle from Haiti. So Emilio had his own emotional story to tell us. There was a program recently where he was able to use radio to reunite some of the people who hadn't spoken since the earthquake itself. And on this program, a young boy in Haiti spoke with his mother, who lives in Boston. This story is going to be airing on the BBC World Service on Thursday. And in the story, the mother was so overjoyed she found out that her son was alive that she broke out into song, singing the religious hymn, How Great Thou Art. Here's a short excerpt. Emilio, tell us the story about the day when the mother was reunited with her son on the air. I mean, what was it like to be a radio host that day?
That was indeed one of the most incredible, and I've worked in radio for a long time here in the U.S. and in the U.K. It was the most incredible day because for several days we've been getting text messages from this 16-year-old, Pinez Macari, who started texting us last weekend and saying, you know, I need to find my mom. I haven't talked to her since the earthquake, and he lives in Haiti. She lives in Boston. And he sent us a phone number, but it was the wrong number, unfortunately. So we then took the unusual step of actually directing an on-air message to one person. You know, Pinez, you've given us the wrong number twice now. Can you try? We really do want to help. Give us the number again. And he sent the right number. We got in touch with this lady, Simone, who lives in Boston. She's an American citizen. And Simone was, to say that she was distraught is an understatement of the highest proportions. I mean, Simone had not heard from her son since the earthquake. That was about, at that time, 3 weeks. She hadn't spoken to him. And they used to speak every single day. So the day that we called her to tell her that he was indeed alive and that we had been making contact with him, she was overjoyed. She told us that she hadn't eaten or drunk and barely slept for those 3 weeks. And she had her bags packed, ready to go to Haiti. It was unbelievable. They finally did manage. We managed to get them on a phone line. And it was quite an incredible feeling.
And a testimony to the power of radio. Michael Dybert, do you think that this is a moment? You hear Emilio San Pedro there talking about the texting and the interactivity becoming a radio broadcast. Do you think this is a real moment for the kind of coherence of all these electronic media coming together into some form that really does tell the story?
Well, yeah, I must say, I mean, in addition to the traditional forms such as radio in Haiti, I mean, you would be amazed at the role that, I mean, even social networking sites like Facebook played in kind of spreading information in terms of where people were trapped, who was alive, who was dead. And the thing is, I suppose, now the big question is how do we take all these kind of technological advances and use them in a way that does effectively, for example, get aid to people who don't have it and helps people who are trapped. I mean, when I was there, even up to 2 weeks after the earthquake, you know, you still had huge swaths of Port-au-Prince, which had barely been touched, really, by relief efforts. And so obviously that's something that, you know, on the ground in Haiti, radio is working, and perhaps internationally, you know, social networking sites and whatever are working to spread information about that.
And working together. Well, the important radio is important to us for obvious reasons, but it's great to hear this story coming out of Haiti. Michael Dybert, freelance journalist and author of Notes from the Last Testament, The Struggle from Haiti. We're also joined by Emilio San Pedro, editor for Connexion Haiti, with our partner, the BBC, broadcasting to Haiti from Miami. Thanks to you both.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's a couple themes in there, John, that actually work for this week as the lead up to Valentine's. There's an issue of communication.
Right.
There's an issue of emotional moments.
Yeah, radio pulling people from the rubble, in a sense, emotionally.
That's right. And since it is Valentine's week, and we're talking about love, we want to talk about love and food, which is coming up later this hour. This is The Takeaway. I'm Celeste Headlee.
And I'm John Hockenberry. And Jonas Hosmer, are you there?
Yes, I am.
You got your White House press pass around your neck there?
Nope, but...
You got one, right?
What? I should.
Yeah, well, you've got one, right?
Yeah, I got one, definitely.
Does it say on it that you're 11 years old?
Nope.
But it does say that you're a kid reporter for Scholastic, right? Scholastic News?
Yes, that's big capital letter sign on it.
Congratulations, where you have the lead story about Michelle Obama's initiative announced yesterday, Let's Move, an anti-obesity campaign. She announced it. There was a whole core of reporters there. You were among them. And I'm sure you heard the First Lady say this. Listen.
There is a place in this life for cookies and ice cream and burgers and fries. That is a part of the fun of childhood. Often it's just about balance.
So Jonas Hosmer, one of the people who reported that story, you weren't actually in the room with the First Lady, right? You were sort of outside looking at it on a screen?
I was at White House Live on watching it on the computer, and then I called in and listened to the press conference.
Is it interesting to you how the White House determines which reporters get to be actually in the room and in the photo and which reporters sort of have to look at these live electronic channels?
I think it's actually kind of cool,
So it didn't affect your sense of the experience at all that you weren't actually able to meet the First Lady yesterday?
No.
All right, so what is this story? What's the angle here for kids?
That it's not, like Michelle Obama said, that it's not bad to eat burgers and fries. It's just people are eating them too much, and you want to slow them down and have them once-in-a-while treats.
All right, and she really personalized the story here, and I want to get your assessment of how well you think she did communicating here.
One day, my pediatrician, thankfully, was someone who's already doing what the American Academy is going to do, pulled me aside and told me, you might want to think about doing things a little bit differently. And for me, that was my moment of truth.
So Michelle Obama has had this sort of, you know, tracking obesity happen in her life.
Yeah.
Do you have a personal angle on your story?
Like a definition?
Well, no. I mean, have you struggled with weight loss? Do you, you know, have like that third bowl of Cap'n Crunch in the morning sometimes?
Well, yeah, sometimes. But usually, like, sometimes I'll... When I go for a snack, everyone wants cookies or, like, a package of granola bars. And my mom always says, you want some fruit? So,
did you put that in your story in Scholastic?
Nope.
So just the facts.
Yeah.
How do you think Michelle Obama did? And, you know, the interview you really want to get is with those kids, right?
Yeah, I thought the kids of the interview would be it would be kind of cool to interview the kids, not because to see what it was like from their point, but because they were bored to death on the TV.
Interesting.
So I would have seen what they would have said.
That's your next story, Jonas Hosmer. You know, the two kids in the White House sort of bored to death with this presidency business.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Jonas Hosmer is a Scholastic Kid reporter reporting on the Let's Move campaign. You can see his story, the lead story in Scholastic News, on our website, thetakeaway.org. Thanks, Jonas.
You're welcome.
You're listening to The Takeaway from Public Radio International and WNYC in collaboration with the BBC World Service, The New York Times, and WGBH Radio Boston.
Good morning, everyone. John Hockenberry here with Celeste Headlee. Coming up, a look at food and Valentine's Day. But here's a check on leading stories to begin at just about 48 minutes after the hour. The blizzard is in full force on the East Coast. It's affecting cities from Virginia all the way up to New England. Jim Lee is a meteorologist for the National Weather Service in Baltimore. Mr. Lee, how's it going there in Baltimore?
Well, in the entire Baltimore, Washington region, we're experiencing extremely hazardous conditions, life-threatening conditions this morning. We had a wind gust reported to 60 miles an hour in Manassas, Virginia, and numerous reports of wind gusts over 40 miles per hour in Baltimore as well as Washington. There are whiteout conditions down here. Plows with the Virginia Department of Transportation in Northern Virginia were called off roads this morning because of these severe conditions.
All right. Jim Lee is a meteorologist for the National Weather Service talking about the double punch of wind and snow in this blizzard that's canceled flights all over the region and has meant a day off in school for kids here in New York and for kids all over the region. The president is taking health care again ahead of a special bipartisan health care summit on Monday. He spoke yesterday.
I won't hesitate to embrace a good idea from my friends in the minority party, but I also won't hesitate to condemn what I consider to be obstinacy that's rooted not in substantive disagreements, but in political expedience.
Following the president's comments, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell countered. He said most Americans are against the current health bill and advised Democrats to revamp.
Why would they want to keep pushing something that the public is overwhelmingly against? Obviously, the answer to that is put that measure on the shelf and start over, go step by step, and get it right.
President says he's willing to sign a health bill even if it doesn't deliver everything that he wants. The Japanese carmaker Honda has announced the recall of almost 400,000 vehicles, citing safety concerns over passenger airbags. That's a look at some of the stories that we're following this morning.
On Valentine's Day, romance usually starts at the table. How many restaurant reservations are made for Valentine's Day?
Thousands.
Hundreds of billions of them, yes. Couples go out to a special restaurant. They gaze into each other's eyes over someone else's cooking. But what about bringing the romance right into your own kitchen?
You just want to flip it. And remember, we had butter on it, so it should come right out.
That's my man. Woo!
Oh, give me some, girl.
Good job, Pat.
You are not listening to flirtation there. No, that is true love. Pat and Gina Neely are high school sweethearts and co-hosts of the Food Network show Down Home with the Neelys. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Thank you. Valentine's Day to you guys.
We wanted to invite you into the studio in Memphis, Tennessee, where we're on the air and where you're from, right?
Correct. Yes.
And share some of your recipes and really some of your strategies for making the kitchen a place for cooperation, as well as coming up with strategies to really attract the love of your life, right?
Correct.
Now, we don't want to get into the age thing too much, but you guys do go way back.
Yeah, we met in high school. We dated throughout our senior year, and then Pat and I actually broke up, and we got back together at our 10-year reunion. You know, that 10 years, we just kind of marinated and sauteed, and when I saw him, I had to go ahead and whip it on up.
It was a real reunion.
Now, Gina, how did food figure into the reunion and the rekindling of your love?
Well, you know what? Pat is sort of an old school kind of guy, very, very family oriented. And I always say, there are three ways to get a man. You start with his head, you get his heart, you get that stomach popping. So after he ate that great meal of mine that I prepared, they get your man chicken.
It was on.
It was a wrap.
It's called Get Your Man Chicken?
Yes.
It's called and Pat is a huge lover of chicken, so it's tooling around trying to think of a way that I can incorporate chicken into it, but kind of make the aroma have a sensuous kind of smell to it. Mm. So when you enter my home, it have that smell, and then you can hear the...
Set the stage here, all right? This is the recipe portion of the program. Get Yo Man Chicken, chocolate brownie crunch, braised cabbage and carrots with southern creamed corn. That was the meal that really did the deed?
The meal that sealed the deal.
Oh, man.
Better stop, John.
Give us you talked a little bit about the spices and the ambiance you wanted when Pat walked into the room, but how did you achieve that?
Okay, so what I did first, I kind of lit some candles. I had me a glass of wine first to sort of settle my nerves down. Because you know what? When you're in the kitchen, you want to kind of relax and even let the aromas kind of feed your soul as well as the person that you're preparing it for. So I started with the Get Your Man Chicken, a little wine going, put a little tomato sauce in it, which is kind of similar to almost a chicken cacciatore, but right, has a little twist to it. Then I went on and did the braised cabbage. And braising cabbage basically means you fry it in the skillet, where it's really a lot quicker than the old-fashioned way of boiling it. Added some carrots for a little color. Got a little cream corn going. Mm-mm, mm-mm. Then I said, every great meal needs a little what at the end, a little something sweet. So we did the chocolate brownie crunch. We did a chocolate ganache on top. And I added in a cookie wafer just to kind of throw them off a little bit. Chill that champagne, honey, and when that man ate that food, them candles lit, had that aroma going.
Had some Barry White playing.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, my God. So, Pat, that's the attractive quality of food. There's also the cooperative quality of actually doing it together, in the kitchen. And, in my case, when I start cooking at home, my wife worries about the cleanup. What are some recipes that can keep things simple but keep it all romantic?
Well, you got to work with your wife and your spouse in general. And Gina and I, for years, even before we started having kids and when they were little, if she got home before I did and she started preparing the meal, as opposed to me coming in, plopping down on the sofa, I would immediately come in, wash my hands, and jump right in. If she had potatoes going, I would start mashing them, or I would start pulling the meat out of the oven or putting it in. And so we always just kind of work.
Listen, you guys are too much, man. Look at that. Whoa, turn down the thermostat in that studio.
You know,
here's the thing, though. For me, this food can be a source of tension because not only is he a terrible cook, but, you know, we don't agree on how healthy the recipe should be and whether or not, you know, pizza in and of itself constitutes a full 3-course meal.
You know, cooking is like a dance. You lead, I follow. There's a lot of compromising that goes on, finding your strengths and weaknesses. Like, I don't like to chop onions because I have terrible allergies. So if you notice on the show how Pat does all my chopping, and I may be working the spices because I like to mix it up. So what you do is you sort of find your strengths and weaknesses, just like in a relationship, where you can find, because most times you'll find that if you don't get along in the kitchen, more than likely that bedroom ain't so hot either.
Oh, man, that's great. All right, so Pat, let's get your Lovin' in the Oven menu, and all this stuff's going to be on our website.
Well, you know, we had the flank steak.
Nice.
And then we had the garlic mashed potatoes.
Excellent.
And to top it off, guys, you've got to have some strawberries. So I would make a chocolate syrup, which was more of a fondue, and then I would turn around and dip the strawberries into the chocolate, and I would feed Gina the strawberries.
Oh, that's good.
Which is a tribute to his meat and potatoes.
That's good. Well, it sounds like it's working very well, guys. Finally, any dishes that are things to absolutely avoid if you're going to do Valentine's Day at home as a couple?
First of all, you don't want to do things that are too complicated. Now, I won't be trying to fix my man no collard greens on Valentine's Day. Right. Let's just cut that out altogether. Maybe go with the grilled asparagus, something that's a lot lighter. Any kind of stews where it just kind of requires a lot of work and a lot of chopping, because you don't want things that are too heavy that's going to kind of weigh it down, because if you weigh his stomach down, you're going to wear it the whole night will be weighed down. So you don't want that.
You definitely
let's just
don't
keep it
want
light in the air.
Keep
and
it light.
Feeling good.
Keep it easy.
There's one thing that I'd like to say is that cooking is just like a marriage, as Gina alluded to earlier. It's really about, you know, you guys working together and preparing a great meal that you both can enjoy.
If you make manwich, make it great. Who cares what it is? Just make it great and make it with love.
Pat and Gina Neely, co-hosts of the Food Network show Down Home with the Neelys. Thanks so much, and happy Valentine's Day. I mean, I don't know if that relationship's going to last.
Oh, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I'm
a little, that's a little
happy
sound.
Happy Lover's Day.
Feels a little iffy. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
My darling, I can't get enough of your love, babe. Girl, I don't know why.
Yes, Barry White, Valentine's Day, food. The Neelys, I mean, that's a great combo.
Barry White enjoyed food.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Get Yo Man Chicken. The recipe is on our website. We put some of the dishes that Gina and Pat shared with us in that segment on our website. You can go to the website to get them. And today, since most of the country is getting hit with a blizzard, we're also thinking about snow days. Adults and kids getting one today. What's your best memory of a snow day?
This is Hector phoning from New York. Early to mid-70s, days off from school. Maybe one, if that. But I just find that it used to snow a lot more than it does now, and people used to just get through it and man up. Now everyone has just become wimp. Oh, it's going to snow. I can't come to work. Like if it's a huge disaster. Let's get back to basics. Snow is snow. We live in the Northeast. Get used to it. Loving it.
Give us your take at 877-8 my take. Post it to our site, thetakeaway.org. My dog and my son both love the snow. I'm Celeste Headlee.
I'm John Hockenberry. No snow day for us. It's The Takeaway.
Thanks for listening to The Takeaway podcast. If there's a story you think we should look at or a conversation you'd like us to start, drop us a line at 877-8-MY-TAKE or email us at mytake@thetakeaway.org.
I'm Ira Flatto, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.